Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we discover that one of the greatest finds on Record Store Day actually came from 1966.
All right, we get to listen to Petula Clark.
Record Store Day week.
Whatever that is.
Continues here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
With us, we have two guests.
Yes,
with
we do.
Us right now. We have one here on the deck. That would be
Adam Woodard. Hello, everybody.
Hey, man.
Adam's been on the show before.
Good friend of the show.
We did a whole week around Adam, so that was fun. And then on the Skype machine, we have Jeff Nolan.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeff Nolan.
Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, you are in sunny Florida.
I am indeed.
And you have, much like us here, you have a beer open.
Well, it's a Sunday evening and, the sun is shining.
And, you know, Jim, I will say to our listeners, some of who may remember a thing we used to do a while back that we can't really say a whole lot about, but Jeff was a good friend to us back then.
Very good friend.
Yeah, and a great guy. Amazing sense of humor. It's great to talk to you, Jeff.
I'm really, really happy to be talking to you fellas again as well.
Great guy. And Jeff works for Hard Rock International.
He does.
And he has the coolest job, the job that Patrick covets, the job that Patrick, has been scheming to try to, oust Jeff from.
I still wake up sometimes in the middle of a dream thinking I actually have it, and then it's not real and it's awful.
Hey, the night is young. You never know.
you handle... with white gloves, the memorabilia, right?
Well, I mean, there's that. That's part of it. I'm the music and memorabilia historian for Hard Rock International, which is a fancy way of saying that I am the designated music nerd, and I get to work with our memorabilia team and our marketing teams and our music people, and I get to be the go-to guy who nerds it up.
It's amazing.
We're all speechless.
It's amazing, and. One of the things that you do now on Facebook is every Monday you have like Memorabilia Monday and they're like videos.
Yeah. It's funny how sometimes the simplest things turn out to be the coolest things. I think that probably is usually the case. We just sort of had this brainwave where let's just take a cell phone into the memorabilia warehouse and go live on do Facebook Live.
Yeah.
And I'll grab a piece with, one of my pals over there, my buddy Chase, my buddy Andrea, and just talk about it and nerd it up. And of course, it happened to be a Monday that day. So it turned into Memorabilia Monday. And it's been doing pretty well.
I love it.
Yeah, I love it, too.
And that's why I mentioned the white gloves, because Jeff has to wear the white gloves to handle this stuff, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you can't do jazz hands properly. I can't go full Bob Fosse on you if we don't have the clubs.
Okay, so we're talking about Record Store Day.
We are.
And people have been visiting various stores across the country and talking about what they've been able to find. So, Jeff, how did you spend your national holiday that is Record Store Day?
Well, I went to East West Records here in Orlando, Florida. And, I'm kind of lucky with people in Orlando have this kind of hidden treasure with East West Records, which is one of the rarest of all beasts. It's a mom and pop record store that's been in continuous operation for 46 years.
Wow.
What?
And it's still run by mom and pop. And that would be Hannah and Roman, who I have known since I was literally a child. So we went, my wife and I went there and we bought some awesome stuff.
And that's amazing too, Jeff, that a store, a mom and pop store would be operating in Orlando for so long, which is kind of, most people think of Disney World and they think of a large, like corporate, destination.
They don't think of it as a city with history.
There's a thing that those of us who live here talk about with our friends often is there's two Orlandos. There's the big tourist industrial complex, which is great, man. And locals will go there sometimes too. that is designed to entertain folks and draw them to the area.
Mm-hmm.
And but then there is the actual city of Orlando, Florida, which is a very, very, very different thing, which is full of artists and, you know, all the usual joys and problems of a mid-sized American city, including, fortunately for us, a wonderful record store that's been in existence since like 1971.
Wow, that's incredible.
So what did you get?
I wound up not getting any of the sort of specific record store day stuff.
Okay.
Which pained me a little bit, because there was one thing that I was actually after. The cars, there's a really limited edition Cars, like double album, and it's live in 1979 or, you know, something along these lines. I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time, 'cause when it's dead, we're not so near. I wanted that. That was going to be my record store day specific thing.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, that did not filter down to Orlando, Florida, and I did not get it. However, I did get a extraordinarily limited edition version of Slick Rick's A Children's Story with the actual children's story illustrated children's book. And then the Def Jam 7-inch that came with it. Once upon a time, not long ago, when people wore pajamas and lived life slow, where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to good, there lived a little boy who was misled by another little boy, and this is what he said. Me and you tonight, we're gonna make some cash, robbing old folks and making the dash. They did the job, money came with ease, but one couldn't stop, it's like he had a disease. He robbed another and another and a sister and a brother. Tried to rob a man who was a DT undercover. The cop grabbed his arm, he started acting erratic. He said, keep still, boy, no need for static. Punched him in his belly and he gave him a slap. But little did he know the little boy was strapped. The kid pulled out a gun, he said, why'd you hit me? The barrel set straight for the cop's kidney. The cop got scared, the kid, he thought to figure, I'll do years if I'm...
Wow.
That had children's story, on one, the A side, and I think the B side is The Moment I Feared. But then it also had the CD included of the entirety of The Great Adventures of Slick Rick. So that was fun. And then I dove into the old vinyl bins. And I got to tell you guys, my big walk away treasure,
yeah,
that it's a first edition, clean, beautiful, from 1966. What are some of your favorite albums from 1966?
Oh,
they're huge hits.
Yeah.
Huge hits.
Blonde on Blonde.
Right. Revolver.
Pet Sounds.
Right.
Gosh.
Those were the big ones.
Yeah, those
right?
are some big ones.
Yep.
Bigger hit album than any of that.
Really? Bigger hit album than any of those. 1966.
Number one, the title track, number one on the U.S. Billboard charts for like an insane number of weeks. In
1966.
It had to be.
Answer quick. Don't stop Googling.
Chevy Van by.
No, it's not that. I mean, was it? Let me think here.
We're not Googling. We're going to be honest.
It wasn't the Monkees, right? That would have been.
No.
No, but that's a good hit. You guys are going to have to go really out of the box, or you're never going to get
it. Is it a Sinatra record? I don't know.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Borderline novelty album.
Borderline novelty album.
Hmm.
Man, this is why Jeff is in the job he's in, because yeah. he's stumping the us.
Flying Purple People Eater?
No, that was early. I lost my mind. I was like, oh, gimme.
Man.
Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
I picked up a pristine copy of Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler's Ballad of the Green Beret.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I never would have gotten that.
That was huge. Yeah.
Been
that
here
was
until
huge.
Dark. Yeah. Right. Now that, wow, that's amazing.
It was huge, but nobody thinks of it today.
Like Rubber Soul off the number one position or something. And, I mean, I don't know if that's specifically accurate, but something along that,
something along
level of gravity.
Yeah. And was it just sitting there, Jeff, like alone in the 45 bins?
But no, it wasn't the 45 bins. It was actually an
album.
I bought the album.
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible.
And so I was bumping it today.
Yeah.
And as you do, it obviously silver wings upon their chests. I mean, that's the classic.
Right.
But you got to go deeper in that album to really get down with it. You got to hear a tribute to the Nurses.
After the battle, after the fight, many owe their lives to the ladies and men in white. And all of the men in this war-torn land salute the Nurses of Vietnam. They know the awful toll of war each day. They know more than any the price we pay. A soldier, his hands too burned to write. A nurse takes down his words through the lonely night. They have gone to the front where men fought in the night.
I thought it was the perfect album to buy in 2017.
But what you just said is one of those things that would make a really good article or something like that. It's like sort of like, what are the other songs on records like that, right? That
well,
had like some one-hit wonder,
and
big hit single.
But maybe he made the album because the single did well. I don't know. But sometimes that's the case, right?
You have to fill it out and put out something.
Like you guys will do with stuff that you get into, I'm exactly the same way. I will certainly fall down a Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler rabbit hole.
Yeah. You might be the only one. Yeah.
At least the mythology and the story that the marketing department for the label came up with, and maybe it's true, he wrote these songs while he was an actual Green Beret in Vietnam. And you know, this record came out in 66, so this is really even before... When we think of Vietnam in the 60s, we're thinking of, you know, Kent State.
Right. 70s.
You know,
yeah.
At Berkeley and Purple Haze playing down the Mekong Delta.
Yeah.
This is earlier than that.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, apparently he got wounded in Vietnam. And while he was recovering, he wrote these songs.
Wow.
And I think that probably some opportunistic band arranger saw an angle.
Yeah.
And did these kind of jingoistic, semi-military bump type arrangements and just had Barry. And Barry's, you know, he's a good singer. He has a very pleasing voice.
And there was probably, you know, still a wave of patriotism in the country about the war at that time,
I was
right?
I was
going to
say, this is when people thought it was still a winnable war.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. It's historically, it's just fascinating. And when I saw it, I thought, I just want this in my collection.
I just have to pause everyone here for a moment and say that Adam Woodard has no idea what we're talking about. And
I've heard of, but have zero knowledge of anything deeper than just surface level, like, oh, that sounds familiar. But they started throwing out stuff from 66, and I had no clue what you guys were going with any of that.
Adam, that song you would love. I think it's going to be your new jam.
Yeah.
That's a glorious day.
From there, you go into The Monks, which is also 1966.
Oh, that's right. That's
a different take on the military, yeah.
Yeah.
They were military guys.
Yeah, they were. They had the tonsures, yeah.
Hey, did you guys ever hear of that group called – there was actually – and this is the most lowest of low-hanging fruit. Did you guys ever hear of that group called the Taliban?
No, I don't think I ever did.
This is for real. There was a group of frontline soldiers in Afghanistan.
Wow.
Who made a band at like one of these forward operating bases. And of course, they called it the Taliban, and they were sort of like punk rock guys. And Scott Ian from Anthrax found out about this and sent them one of his like signature Jackson guitars to have on the front lines for their jam.
No way. That's incredible.
But the rumor, and I don't even care if it's true or not, because a good story is all that matters in rock and roll, is that the cat who was putting it together, like the gunnery sergeant or, you know, the honcho who was putting it together.
Yeah.
Had another soldier transferred from a rear echelon position to the front lines because they needed a drummer.
Crazy.
That's like MASH. That would happen in MASH, right?
Yeah, I say it is. Actually, you know what? Maybe that's Bull, and I'm just thinking of a MASH storyline, and that was actually Klinger.
Oh, man. That's
an amazing story.
This is the most fun we've had in weeks, yes. I think.
Just great.
We can count on Jeff.
I got two other things. I got a really clean copy of Warren Zevon's Excitable Boy.
Oh, nice.
Very good.
Yeah.
That just had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I got a double Commodores Live.
All right.
Beautiful.
Sounds like a really good day.
Oh, man, what a great day. I want to go to Record Store Day with Jeff next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fly down to...
Yes, guys. Did you experience this? This was something that really... This really kind of stuck in my mind. When I walked into East West Records, and again, this is a place that has been there for 46 years. Yep. I walked in, and it was absolutely packed to the rafters.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yep. And, you know, I thought, I remember that this was just Saturday at the record store. And I had this really amazing moment. And this is kind of the main thing I wanted to share with you guys. I had this incredible moment yesterday where I take my Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler album up to Roman, the man who, you know, runs the joint, and his wife, his beautiful wife, Hannah. And I tell Roman, you know, buddy, I bought my first, the first time I bought an album from you, I was 12 years old. I turned 50 this year.
Wow.
Bet you made him feel great saying that.
Yeah, and you turned 90.
And he remembered what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I remember. You had terrible taste in music back then.
Beautiful.
It was a beautiful thing, man. It was a lot of fun.
No, it's record stores. And just, you know, like I said, what you said, I think, is a really good point, is I think the record store day phenomenon is great in terms of bringing people out and getting some excitement and all of that. But yeah, that used to just be called Saturday. That was just,
that's right,
you know, the day at the record store. And I think there's some residual effect of it over it, but you know, obviously it's not ever going to be like it was.
Well, and I'll echo a little bit what Jeff said too, and be interested to see what you say, Adam. You know, I ran into people I hadn't seen in a while, you know, guys that I just knew from around Falls Church, plus some just record collector geeks like me that were just really amped up and like, where were you? Did you go to another store? Where have you been? You know, and I haven't seen these kind of people in a while, and you generally don't see them when you go in on a regular Saturday or, you know, like a Thursday afternoon.
Yes, I've been collecting for about 8 months now. Fair warning, I'm 24, so I'm behind on it, but I've always wanted to have a collection. So I've never seen a store packed before.
Yeah.
Because every time I go, there's maybe 8 to 10 people on a great day.
Yeah.
When people are picking through, looking at stuff. So I had, and granted, I tried to go early. I had work. So I tried to go. Lines were too long. The three places I went to couldn't work it out. I had to work at 8. But I went back at about 4 or 4:30, and places were still had 30, 40 people in it, more than I had ever seen before. And just talking to the owners and saying they had 150 people, 200 people waiting outside to get in the morning, I couldn't fathom what that would look like.
Yeah. And just that sense of it being a gathering place where you would see guys that you would see every week, you know, and they were coming to check out what kind of new records or used records came in that week or buying something special. And yeah, it was always a meeting place where you exchange information and stuff about shows and all kinds of
stuff. And like you said about being excited, you know, one of my friends, Matt DeLong, shout out, he's over in Nebraska. He was texting me all morning like, dude, you got to get out. Like, I got all this great stuff. So I was amped up just sitting there waiting for the clock to hit 4 so I could bounce out of work and then immediately get somewhere as fast as possible. Because I mean, I was excited when I started my collection and I came on for an episode to talk to you guys about it, but I was so amped up knowing that there were going to be more people just as, if not more amped up than I was to be out there looking for stuff.
Yeah.
So for Adam, it's like a little bit of time travel, right? He gets to go back, like back to the future.
Really interesting.
And experience what it was like back in the day.
Really is.
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
This was my pleasure.
Thanks for your
this
time.
This was an absolute pleasure. And, if you see any more like cool records, please send them our way.
Before I go, let me ask a question to the group.
Okay.
Do you think, because this is something I thought about yesterday, do you think that, you know, the nature of pre-digital music, how hard did that influence the way that you perceived the music you were listening to? If you had to save your money and make a choice and go and, I just spent $8.98 on this album.
Yes.
The way that you digest it is going to be different than if it's something you can just access immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Completely. So you want to answer that first?
No. Well, I would say that I used to get real angry when I spent money that I saved or was part of my budget and somebody had told me or I'd heard that it was going to be good and I bought it and I brought it home and listened to it and it sucked and I was real mad, you know? And I couldn't really take it. I mean, maybe I could have taken it back, but I never did. I was just, you know, I mostly got pissed off. But I also had, you know, a kind of a personal rule to that degree. I had to listen to it at least 3 times, both sides. Because if I didn't, then I wasn't giving it a fair shake. But if I was still mad after 3 times on each side.
When I was a kid in like high school and had very limited funds, yeah. I had a rule that I had to know like at least, I think, like 3 songs before I would buy the album, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had a somewhat of a confidence level in it. But the other thing I will say, Jeff, to your point, Patrick and I have talked about this, I think, off pod before, which is that nowadays I don't feel that I develop a relationship with albums the way I used to, because when you went out and bought it, first of all, you had a limited, you know, you had a finite amount of stuff that you could pick from because it was your collection. And then also because you spent money on it or whatever, you would listen to it several times in the car, at home, whatever. Now it's like I go to Spotify. Hey, I want to hear that new record. I listen to it once. Now what's the other new record I want to hear? I listen to that once. Oh, now I got to hear, you know, this. Here's an album from 20 years ago I never bought. I want to go listen to that. Right. And it doesn't stick the same way that it used to. You used to really develop a deeper relationship with this music.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a very limited knowledge base of looking forward to when an album was coming out or when a CD was coming out. So I've never really had to go through that. But at the same time, yeah, like Jim was saying, that I have a list on my computer. It's a Word document because I'm so scatterbrained when I see something on Spotify. If I'm listening to something, I'll write it down because I'm trying to not do that whole bouncing around just to forget about stuff. Because like you said, if you have to listen to something more than once to know if you truly like it, I mean, you're going to have your gut feeling and gut instincts on it, but you might not understand what you're really listening to. But yeah, I to be honest, I have no idea what it would have been like having to spend money like that, because like you said, I can just, oh, someone just dropped a new album, go to Spotify.
Yeah.
Like that $9.99 comes out of my credit card and I never see it anyways.
It's only once
a
month.
It's like it wasn't even there. Exactly. So, I mean, that's a once a month thing for me. So,
and you get thousands of albums out of that probably, right?
So I get a better bargain than you guys ever had.
I used to get emotional too when I brought a new record or 2 records into my collection. I had to sort of introduce them to the other records. And like, okay, you're going to be right next to, you know... You're going to be right
next to the Beastie Boys next to the Beatles. Right.
Are you guys going to get along? You know, you're going next to Pete Townsend's solo album. So
I am very particular about where I stack my records up and how and where I put them.
Right.
Well, it depends which Pete Townsend solo album, because they both have different attitudes. The All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes is really the one with the more it's a little snooty.
Yes,
it
exactly.
won't be as accepting of your new albums.
That's right.
This is how we know Jeff is one of us, because Patrick and I just went to dinner the other night and had a whole conversation about Pete Townsend's solo albums. Great depth and detail.
Right. People were moving away from us in the restaurant.
Well, you can make an argument that that every Who album is a Pete Townsend solo album with a singer.
That's very good point.
Yes. But I feel what you're saying about people moving away from you. I always think that my people are the folks that are left at the table after all the cool people have gotten sick of your dorkiness about music and they've just bailed.
That's right.
And now it's everybody else. You know, it's the three of us sitting around talking about, you know, Buck Dharma's solo on Dominance of Submission from the Third Bluest Cult album.
Then you're down to your boys. I think we're down to that crew right here.
That's right.
All the listeners.
I've kind of backed away from the mic at this point. I'll start.
We got to wrap this up.
Oh, this was great.
This is really great. Jeff, we want to have you on again soon. This is awesome.
Anytime, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much. And please listen to Rock in the Suburbs when you can.
Every day.
And or every day. You can find us on iTunes or whatever that's called now. And tune in and Stitcher and Audio Boom. And please also let us know what you got on Record Store Day or just whatever other geeky vinyl stuff you want to talk about.
Yeah, and I'll say that you can find East West Music at 4895 South Orange Avenue in Orlando, Florida.
Please go there. Please support them. They sound like great people. You can also call the Suburban Party Line, leave a message there, and then we'll put you on the show. That's 612-440-1984. Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Suburbs Pod. And Jeff, where can people find your content, including Memorabilia Monday?
Well, if you go to hardrock.com, I edit and admin the Revolutions Per Minute blog, which has got videos, podcasts, written content, images, tons of cool stuff. And Memorabilia Monday is every Monday at 11 o'clock Eastern live on the Hard Rock Facebook page.
It's awesome. But you can go back and watch it after that if you didn't see it live, right?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely. In fact, I archive all of those on the Revolutions Per Minute site as well.
That's great. All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff, man.
We'll talk to you again soon. And to our listeners, we'll talk to you tomorrow. You have to get Patrick Zine. That's the only way you know what he's doing.